Shmura talks about some interesting cases, right? We're all used to having our menorahs with 8 candles for 8 nights, and we do the mahajan, to add 1 candle per night per person. But strictly speaking, all you need to do is have that 1 candle near your shabbos on your yotzei. So I understand what I need to do if I have 1 candle. I know what I need to do if I have 44 candles, right? But what if I don't have one candle per night, nor do I have 44. I have somewhere in between, okay? Give one example. Let's say it's the second night of Hanukkah, and I have 2 candles. Okay, second night of Hanukkah, I have 2 candles. So here, it's a very simple equation, okay, because the second night you use 2 candles, you're good. But my friend has 0 candles, okay? So sometimes I need to make choices within my own supply. Is it better for me to have a minimum over the course of the duration of Hanukkah versus having certain nights when I'll be able to be Mekayim, the Mahajim, and the Mahajim. But now, my conflict is a question of priority, my own personal Kima Mitzvah versus the Kima Mitzvah of my friend. And the Mishnah Berurah says, it's the last line over here, Sivkat and Vav, Im Yeshlo Shemen B'Mitzumtzum, I'll call Hashemon Yom L'Chaver In L'Klum. If you have enough oil to last you exactly for 8 days, but your friend has nothing, it's better for you to light just 1 candle over the course of, you know, for each of those 8 nights, and make sure your friend has candles for each night as well. Because, strictly speaking, all you need is 1, right? So better to share the light, okay, and let someone else perform the mitzvah, rather than you perform the mitzvah in the greatest possible way, right? You could have said, maybe the priority, the best thing I can do is to do the mitzvah in its maximalistic fashion. Kamashmalan, it's better to do it in a more minimalistic fashion, provided that an additional member of Klai Yisrael will also get the mitzvah in whatever way he's able to do so, each of you having 1 candle. Yes, Josh? What's that? Right. Neru Shabeso, you only need 1. Okay, everyone understand? Yes. Share your candles so that someone can do the mitzvah, even if you're going to do the mitzvah in a simpler fashion. Right, so now, it sounds like a pretty simple din, and it's almost intuitive. But what lies at the heart of this is a message which I think is fundamental to the way we approach Yiddishkeit. Sometimes people get caught up in their personal avodah, and not, I wouldn't say take a selfish approach to mitzvos, but feel as if it's about me, instead of being about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every aspect of our avodah Hashem, as we'll see, is designed and is directed towards bringing more kvod shamayim to reveal HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world, and the performance of mitzvos is one way in which we do that. The mitzvah of Hadlakas Neres Chanukah brings Pirsumei Nisa. It describes how Kadosh Baruch Hu transcends the rules of nature, is beyond any limitations. And that's something that he's also demonstrated, used that kalach to highlight Klal Yisrael as being his special people throughout history, as many holidays often celebrate. But if that's behind the mitzvah, so it's not just, okay, that's the reason why I'm doing this mitzvah right now. No, that's underlying the concept of mitzvahs altogether, that I'm bringing Kvod Shamayim into the Bria. So if it's not simply about me, but rather I am one of the vehicles that conducts the introduction of Kvod Shamayim into the Bria, then we're really all on the same team. So if I light 8 candles and you light 0, then I haven't actually accomplished more than me doing a lesser mitzvah and you doing a lesser mitzvah, because the sum total of mitzvahs and of people performing mitzvahs is actually less. I'll illustrate this with a story. There's a Hasidus HaMaisa. Someone went to ask the Rebbe if there was one character, one personality in Jewish history that you could trade places with. Anybody. Who would you choose? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's it going to be? So he said, I wouldn't trade places with anybody. You're going to make me Avraham Avinu? Wonderful. He's a great tzaddik, and he introduced monotheism into the world. Wonderful. But if you switch me with Avraham Avinu, the grand total of Avraham Avinu's in history would still just be 1. And that's not an advantage to have me being Avraham Avinu. I'm more concerned that there should be a Avraham Avinu, and I'll figure out my own way to contribute to the Yiddishkeit in the world. But it's not about me having that role versus somebody else. And it shows itself in so many different ways that we interact with our mitzvot. Here's a very interesting illustration. Chazon Ish paints a picture with the following story. Not a true story, but you know, in the old days in small Jewish communities, and people would often be traveling from one place to another, and they wouldn't have a hotel to stay at, and they didn't necessarily know someone in the neighboring shtetl where they were staying. Or you'd also have poor people. Poor people sometimes would, they'd be vagabonds going from place to place, and they wouldn't have any place to sleep. They'd sleep in the shul, right? They'd sleep in the shul, and hopefully in either of these situations, could be a traveler, could be a poor person, in the community, there would be a I don't know what they call it nowadays, like the Shabbos Hospitality Committee. You know, the Breuer Shul down the block, haven't gone there too many times recently, but occasionally, before I was married, I went there on Friday nights just to see the davening. They have a choir Friday night. It's a very different type of davening than what you're used to seeing in your shuls. And there's an individual, wonderful person with a big, warm smile, would always come over to me and say, "Do you need a place to eat?" And, you know, I didn't want to tell him I'm eating the calf because, you know, I didn't want to insult his wife's cooking or something like that. But, you know, there's someone who's in charge of making everyone feel like they belong here. And in the old days, when you could have many guests, travelers, poor people, there was a gabbai. And the gabbai was in charge of making sure that everyone was matched up with a place to go. So he says, "Ma'isa b'chassid echad, shehiz min orech l'sod etzel b'shabbos." There was a certain chassid, and he was aware of someone who was coming to town who needed a place, and I guess maybe met him in the mikveh Friday afternoon, and he invited him. He said, "Come to me after shul, and I'll give you a place to eat." And all the kids are really happy, and his wife throws another chicken into the oven, and they set the table, and they're really excited. And you know, I tell you, it's a beautiful thing when your kids take part in the mitzvah of Hachnas Orchim. It was a bittersweet moment when sometime in May or June, my kids said to me, like, "What do you mean we're not having Shabbos guests forever?" You know, like it was like devastating for them. Like they've grown up like where pretty much every Shabbos we have lots of people over, and it becomes part of your expectation, part of the Shabbos experience, is that you know you have a labedik table and people coming, and you know my kids also like when the guests come and shmooze with them and talk to them about comic books and stuff like that. You know, but it's part of the experience. It's beautiful Shabbos. And if you don't have that, you feel like something's missing. So the whole mishpach is getting ready. They know that there's this guest coming. His children, his wife, they're also very excited to have guests. The gabbai, who's in charge in shul, of divvying up all the guests, when he saw the various guests in shul, he didn't know who was who, and who had an invitation, who didn't have an invitation. And he sent this particular guest, right? The chassid found him Erev Shabbos, but before the chassid could make it over to him in shul, the gabbai had already sent him to another location. So now the chassid comes home. The righteous person comes home to his house Friday night. So he was all by himself. He had no one to bring home with him because inadvertently, this guest was sent somewhere else. And all the kids are crying. "What do you mean you didn't bring home anyone, Abba? You promised us you'd bring home a guest." And they were all sad. So the father, this righteous person, says to them, "No. He says, a guest is not like a piece of merchandise. I got one, you got one, buy, sell, trade. No. My job was to make sure that everyone was accounted for, that everyone in shul had a place to go, a place to eat their meal. But it doesn't really make a difference to me if he got that treatment, that hospitality from me or from somebody else. Because the objective of Hachnas Orchim is no Jew should be left behind. Not I should be the one who's in charge of giving out food, and I should be the one who everyone says, "Oh, thank you so much, you're so generous, and you know we're not worthy, what would we do, and we're going to honor you at the dinner and buy you a nice plaque, and you're going to be Mr. Chesed." That's wonderful if you can be the guy, if you can be the person who is the vehicle by which those mitzvos are able to occur, wonderful. But a person can go off the deep end and start thinking about themselves as, if it's not me, then, you know, better the mitzvah wouldn't happen if I'm not the one doing it. That's crazy, right? That's a distortion of what the mitzvah is about, and it's a distortion of the midos. That's what the Chazan is talking about. It's a distortion of the midos that are supposed to be internalized and supposed to be developed within us when it's more about me than about the fact that the mitzvah took place, the fact that the chesed occurred, and it was on the receiving end that we're really ensuring that the mitzvah goes off the way it's supposed to go. He said, sometimes people don't understand that. If a person doesn't have this mentality, what's dangerous is they may love doing good. It's always easier to do good than to prevent yourself from doing bad. There's a better feeling when you're packing the Tomchei Shabbos packages. It feels really good to know that you're going to be helping someone. It's a lot more difficult to feel as good about avoiding the wrong decision as well, because it doesn't have, you know, like I said, I'm not eating a cheeseburger right now. Okay? So there's no excitement in that. If a person's working on something, a person trying to conquer a certain bad midah, if they're proactive about growing, so then you can get a tremendous geschmack out of knowing when you've exerted that self-control and when your strength shines through in your ability to make your own decisions and not be pulled by peer pressure or by your taiva or by your impulses. That is a powerful thing. But if a person is only focused, I need to do, and it's got to be me doing, so then you may have tzaras ayin. It may bother you when someone else does the mitzvah instead of you doing the mitzvah. And that's what we're saying is a distortion of what a mitzvah is. It's a story that's brought over here in Reb Nevenzahl Sefer. I forget which Sefer it's in. Maybe it's in the Sefer on Beinam Tzarm, Tisha B'Av. So he says, here's a story from Shlomo Zalman, that the Netziv was once in a very good mood, very, very happy. It was Simchas Torah. And all the boys in the village were dancing. And one guy comes over to him. One of them says, Rebbe, please give me a bracha. It's a happy day, and I see Tov Ayin Hu Yivarach. When a person's in a good mood, there's a special inyan for their brachos to be powerful. Maybe that's why people go over to others on a birthday. I don't know if it's only about a certain school, about a birthday, but also when a person's in a good mood, so their brachos, right? We should, the Kohanim have to make a bracha, Levarach es Amo Yisrael, bi'ahava. There has to be a connection, there has to be a desire to bestow the bracha on others, and when a person's happy, true happiness spills over to other people around them too. So the Netziv gave him a bracha, you should be a gadol, you should learn lots of Torah and be matzliach, you should be rich, you should find a great shidduch. Talmud said, no, thank you, Rebbe, that's not what I'm asking for. It's okay, well, sound like a pretty good bracha to me, what would you like the bracha to be? So I don't want to be a gadol, I don't want to just be matzliach and rich and good shidduch, I want to be the Rosh Kibahag. You know what a Rosh Kibahag is? Rosh Kibahag, take a look at this. Rosh Kibahag is an abbreviation. Rabban Shel Kol B'nei Hagola. I want to be Rav Yashiv. I want to be the Gadol Hador. I don't want to just be a big time. I want to be the Gadol Hador. And Tziv said, you fool. He said, I'm very happy to give you bracha, but I'm not ready to curse everybody else, right? Just because you're going to be a great person, that's also saying that everyone else is going to be beneath you. Why do I need to say that? It's not for you to be a gadol. Not that everyone should be smaller than you. Sometimes we want to reach levels in ruchnias, and that's wonderful. That should be our goal. That should be our aspirations. But what this guy was asking, the Netziv saw beneath it, what he was really asking was, I want to step on everybody's toes on my way up. Right? If you ask for something like that, you're not just asking for madrigas in your Yiddishkeit. It's me to the exclusion of everyone else. I want to be number one. Number one means, right, number two is the second loser, right? That's not your goal. Your goal is that everyone should be a Rosh Kibahag. Everyone should be a gadol. Not that it should be me versus you. Then bring another story. Rav Shalom Shadron, the Maggid of Yerushalayim, he was once giving a shmooze about this inyan, that a person, in the same way that you should be mevater, you should give in, you should be generous and not selfish when it comes to gashmias, teach kids to share when they're young. Share your toys, right? You need to teach them, we need to teach ourselves to want to share in Ruchnius also. That, like we're saying, it's not just about me. He told the story, Rav Shlomo Salanter once had a yahrzeit for his mother, and there was another person who had a yahrzeit for his daughter. So which one comes first? Who gets to be the chazan? Person who has a yahrzeit for his mother. Kibbutz Hava Eim Stam, right? That's more of a priority. But, and not only that, Rav Shlomo Salanter was the good hador. However, Rav Shlomo Salanter noticed that even though maybe for various reasons he should come first, he saw the other guy was in pain. So the other guy was very sad. They did not have the chance to be the chazan on behalf of his daughter's yahrzeit. And he said, please, you be the chazan. No problem. And Rav Shlomo Salanter said, my mother should get the schus better than she should get the schus of me saying Kaddish for her, or davening for the Amid for her, better she should get the schus of me doing a chesed for someone else. That's also le'ilah nishmasa. That also counts for something for the sake of my daughter. It's very interesting. Just as an aside, but this is something to keep in mind. I think it brings home the point in the halacha. It's not unusual. I don't know, maybe not unusual. It's not unusual that these types of fights can break out in a community. One person, I have a yahrzeit, this person, I have a yahrzeit. And it can get a little bit late with it. It says in the poskim that if Reuven and Shimon are disagreeing about who, they have a conflict, who should be the chazan. If Reuven strong arms Shimon to get the amud, and really Shimon al-Pidin deserved to take precedence, then any zchus that Reuven earns as being the chazan goes to the neshama of Shimon's loved one anyway. So, right, so sometimes we think, I need to be the one to push myself up there and be the one who is selfishly, you know, I'm first. You know, it's not going to help you anyway. You're not doing a mitzvah. The whole point of davening for the Amid is I'm going to do a mitzvah that will earn a zchus for my parents in Shemayim. But you're not doing a mitzvah. You do a bigger mitzvah than by doing a chesed and making shalom and letting the other guy take it. You gain nothing by pushing yourself to the front. There's a story in a shul in New Jersey. Someone related to me, but there was a similar type of conflict. And in this case, one of the people who was supposed to say Kaddish was not a member of the shul who was just passing through. And that's also on the books in the poskim. If you have two people with the yahrzeit, a person who's a member of the shul, you know, he pays his dues, he lives in the community, so he comes first before the person who just happens to be passing through and needed the shul for the minyan. But this shul happens to have a practice. I don't know if you. I think this is what they do in my shul. The Young Israel of West Hempstead, whoever's davening for the Amid has to have some beged elyon. Has to be wearing like a jacket or something. I know some shuls in Teaneck have a rule like that. Also, yeah, you have to be wearing a jacket to daven for the Amid. Okay. This local person who's saying Kaddish, he ran out of his house early in the morning, make sure to get to shul on time, and he didn't have his jacket with him. So the other guy who was passing through was also supposed to say Kaddish, right? So even though he didn't take precedence because he wasn't a local member of the shul, but he had a jacket. So from that perspective, he deserved to win. He deserved to be the chazan. Right before davening started, you know, the other guy got to the front and said, oh, I forgot my jacket. So he said, all right, I guess you get to daven. He said, the other guy who was a visitor said, no, took off his jacket and gave it to the local community member and said, it would be a bigger nachas ruach for my father that he knew I took the jacket off my back to give it to someone else to earn a schus for their father also. Because it's not about me. It's not about me. Why am I saying Kaddish? Why is a person davening for the Amid? To lead the tzibur in blessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and being mispallel that Hashem's name should be revealed in the world. That's what it means. Yiskadal v'yiskadesh me'rava. To lead the tzibur in doing that is it's Kiddush Hashem. But a Kiddush Hashem is not a Kiddush of me, it's a Kiddush of God. So whoever does it, the same Kiddush Hashem has been accomplished. So it's not about me doing it, it's about me ensuring that it happens. Whoever is the conduit by which it happens, I have to look at that as a tremendous and positive outcome. The PS of the story, after Shalom Fajan said the story in Shul, about how Rabbi Shlomo Salanter did such a chesed for his mother and earned this chus for her neshama in a different way. So someone came up to the Magid after and said, you know what? It's very nice that you tell the story about Rabbi Shlomo Salanter, right? That he gave up the Kaddish to the other person in Shul. But you know what? He knew what tefillah was. If he's mevater, if he gives up on the kaddish for somebody else, that's really meaningful because he appreciates the value of the kaddish. For me, you know, I'll give up a kaddish, but I wouldn't give up $10 to that guy, right? Because $10 means a lot more to me than a kaddish. I'm a simple guy, right? So all, if I gave up the kaddish, all that shows is that it's not worth $10 even. So I'm not getting no answer for him. He said, you're right. A sacrifice is worth only as much as you appreciate what it is you're giving up. For us simple people, maybe to give up a kaddish doesn't sound like such a big deal. We shouldn't be mevaz of the kaddish. We shouldn't take it lightly. But at the same time, we can't ignore the primary point of the story, which is to appreciate that in ruchnis, you don't fight about ruchnis. The mitzvah is going to be done. You shouldn't be in a rush to share it with someone else and let someone else have that opportunity to take part. It's not about me. Sometimes people have misplaced priorities. In the Haftorah we read just 2 days ago on Shabbos, so there's a vision in Zechariah. And Zechariah is, Hashem is speaking to him, and the Satan is there, and some are on his left side, some are on his right side. That's how it describes, based on the Pasuk in Malachim, and the Medrash asks on that Pasuk, I don't understand. In Shemayim, is there a right? Is there a left? Why do we have this notion of the Malachim being on one side, Malachim being on the other side? Who cares where he is? Why is the Navi Zechariah have to tell us that the Satan was on the right side of Yeshua Kohen Gadol? It doesn't make a difference which side he's on. He can have the Hashpah and he can try to convince someone to do an Avera wherever he's standing. So he says the Pshat like this. The Satan is the Yetzer Hara. The purpose of the Yetzer Hara, his job is to make people falter, to make them stumble and make the wrong decisions. Ultimately, to push people to the left. We can use left proverbially as the away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, further and further away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if he's successful, great. If he pushes you away, he's good. But if he sees, the Yetzer Hara sees that he's unable to push you to the left, so he says, no problem, I'll push you to the right. The Satan would be much happier, even if he has to get you to do a mitzvah, if by getting you to do a mitzvah, he's going to bring you closer to doing an avera. What does that mean? He says, Al adam suma lios, this is Chafetz Chaim speaking, Al adam suma lios tamer ar, lashkiach in pekich ha-yitzhara. A person has to always be watching his yitzhara and be very sharp to realize in what direction the Yetzer Hara is pushing you. Loredes l'sov daito, l'zor mimen av etachlis ha-zahiris, ha'af imi fateno lasos mitzvah, al yovav al yishmol. Sometimes you gotta plumb the depths of the Yetzer Hara's strategies, because you may think he's trying to convince you to do a mitzvah, but he has a plan. He has an agenda to spin that mitzvah into an avera. Because a mitzvah the Yetzer Hara convinces you to do is ultimately going to do an avera. So he says the Yetzer Hara sometimes... Ever notice sometimes you just can't get out of bed? It's really hard to pull yourself out of bed. Okay, you want to go to Minyan, you set your alarm on time, but you hit the snooze button, and you hit the snooze button again, and you can't get out of bed. And there's other mornings when you just pop right out of bed, right? And it's not always corresponding to how much sleep you got the night before. You know, it seems random sometimes. Zaka Chavetz Chaim, sometimes it's the Yetzer Hara keeping you in bed, and sometimes it's the Yetzer Hara getting you out of bed. So I understand the Yetzer Hara keeping me in bed. All right, fine. That's not where I want to be. I want to start my day. I want to go to shul. I want to put on my tefillin. Sometimes the Yetzer Hara is getting me out of bed. Why is the Yetzer Hara getting me out of bed? Because the Yetzer Hara knows what you do in shul. The Yetzer Hara knows that you sit in the back and you schmooze the whole time and you're talking during laning and you're disturbing everybody. And it's, you know what it says in Shulchan Aruch? It says in Shulchan Aruch that a person who speaks during Chazar Sashatz, Godol avono minaso, his sin is worse than he can bear. As far as I know, it does not say that any other place in all of Shulchan Aruch. Okay? Any place else. A person who speaks, right? It's amazing, right? 3.5 minutes. I can't keep quiet for 3.5 minutes. You can, okay? But the Yetzer Hara says, if that's what you're going to do in shul, come right in. You know, I'm going to get you out of bed every single day because I know how you can disturb everybody else. Everybody knows, you know, we've all been on both sides of the coin. Sometimes you're not a good zone in shul, but a friend comes over and starts schmoozing with you, and you're trying to you don't want to call him out. You don't want to respond either. You're hoping he's going to get the message, and if you don't answer him, like, he'll move away and start and bother someone else. You know what I'm talking about? Or sometimes maybe you had to go over to somebody and you spoke to them and like they were giving you the vibe, like, all right, just not now, we'll talk later. You know, and either you got the message or you didn't get the message. So, you know, there is that conflict that exists sometimes. Yitzhar knows when you're going to either perform, when you're going to do what you're supposed to do in shul, when you're not supposed to do what you're supposed to do in shul. And sometimes he will get on the right side. That's what it means. The Yitzhar was mimino. He was on the right side. He was pushing him to do the mitzvah because he knows that he can take that mitzvah and turn it around in a negative way. He'll do whatever it takes, even make you do a mitzvah so that he'll get you to do an aver too. And sometimes I think this is another expression of that. He'll push us to want to do mitzvah so much that the push, the motivation to do the mitzvah is me versus you. When in reality, a person has to look at it on the contrary. The godless of what I'm accomplishing is that I brought more spirituality, I brought more of the Shechina into Olam Hazeh, but if someone else did it, I'd be just as happy. The sum total of Avraham Avinu's in the world, like we said before, I'm satisfied if it's one or two or three, but for me to be instead of Avraham Avinu doesn't accomplish anything. Yes, Shai, what's your question?
So I think I heard this Shabbos a few weeks ago.
Shabbos, we had a Q&A Friday night, Aaron was there, and you know, we're talking about you know, a person should spend some time, as we do in Shir, learning Musar, because that's the only way that, you know, we have to constantly keep ourselves in an upward trajectory. So he said, you know, but what if I read a sefer like a Mesil Sisharim, and I get a little bit down because, like, he's describing something that is beyond my reach. Okay? It happens sometimes. So a person never has to feel that if I read something in a sefer, that means right now, today, or even in 20 years from now, that's going to be a perfect description of me. But a person does need to have some awareness of the levels a human being can reach, and then do whatever's reasonable within his purview to move up. Every step counts. You don't need to reach the ultimate stage. You don't need to be the biggest tzaddik ever. You need to just be to fulfill your potential. But if we don't know where the areas of potential lie, then we're never going to be motivated to at least try on our own level, A. And B, and I think this is even more important, is you always need to remember you're 20 years old, you're 30 years old, you're 40 years old. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless you with another 20, 30, 40, many more years than you are right now. And don't lock yourself into what you are or what you think you're going to be now or even in 5 or 10 years from now. It's a lifelong journey. And if someone who works on themselves over time, if you ask them when they're 40, 50 years old, would you have imagined they'd reach this level when you were 20? Probably the answer is no, because we always convince ourselves to shortchange our potential. But a person who's consistent, doesn't give up. Or you ask someone who finished Daf Yomi, say three times. What is that, 20 years, 21 years, right? Say he goes into the working world at 25, finishes college, starts working at 25, and he learns Daf Yomi, learns for 45 minutes a day, an hour a day, Daf Yomi. Doesn't sound like such a crazy undertaking, right? Fast forward 20 years later, 22 years later, 23 years later, he finished Shas three times, right? If you'd ask the guy at 20, 25, when he finished college, do you think you can finish Shas three times? Say, of course not. Like, I'm just a regular guy, you know, I'm learning a simple guy. But you know what? You put in an hour a day, you finish Shas three times in 22 years. And the guy's only 45, 50, right? Give him another 20, 25 years, he's going to finish Shas six times. It's unbelievable. To finish Shas six times, it's within reach. You put in 45 minutes a day, even an hour a day, you can do it. So the same thing is true in all these growth areas, Shai. So, but that's the next step. We still have to have that on the radar at some point. There, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Rashi. Rashi says in Bereishis, right? The initially, it comes from the Gemara and Chulin you have on the screen. Initially, it says on the fourth day of creation that Hashem created the two great luminaries, the sun and the moon. And then a little bit later, it talks about the Maor HaGadol and Maor HaKatan. The Maor HaGadol is on duty during the daytime, and the Maor HaKatan is on duty during the nighttime. This is one of my favorite words of all time. So the Gemara asks, what's Pshat? Right? There's a first pasuk says, two big celestial bodies. And then the pasuk says there was one big, one small one. What happened? Answers one of the moon shrank. Why? Because the moon complained. Said to Hashem, how could you have Shnei Malachim Mishtanshim Bekesrach? How do you have two kings serving with the same crown? You need to have someone who's in charge. You need to have authority over here. So Hashem says, oh, you know what? You're right. I'm going to make the sun the king, and you'll be the small guy. You'll be the one who shrinks. And that's how we have a sun and a moon. When Mashiach comes, we're going to have We're going to have two powerful lights once more, but that's how things look in Olam Hazeh. So the Baal Moshe asked the question, if the moon was so smart that Hashem accepted his taina, that really it is appropriate on some level to have one greater force of light and one of thought, right? So what did he do wrong? Why did Hashem punish him, right? If that was what God saw made sense, so to speak, and that's how our world looks, so where did he go wrong? You hear the kasha? Yeah, Jeremy, you hear the kasha? So the answer is because, listen to how the moon said it. The moon said, how can two kings serve under one crown? That's a fatal mistake. If you see yourself that I'm the king, and I'm in competition with another king, then you blew the whole mission. You're not looking at yourself as two kings serving one crown. It's two servants serving one king. If I see myself and the sun both equal, as it were, using them as a metaphor for the type of clash and conflict we were describing before, so then if we both see ourselves as ultimately serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so who cares if it's me or you? We're accomplishing the same task. We're both out here to serve the same mission. You have two cops in a car and they're partners with each other, right? So they get to the scene of the crime. They get to the wherever it was that they were called to investigate, right? So who cares if one goes out, checks out the scene, the other one stays in the car, you know, taking notes or sending the report to the base, or the other way around? In the end of the day, you come back to the station. Did he get the job done? He got the job done. It's not about me, not about you. We're all here to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world further and further. So if I'm the lead role or I'm the supporting cast, the job got done. And that helps a person conceptualize their purpose in the world in a way that will propel the effectiveness of their avoda in some ways better than if it's about me. Let's just close up also with the dreidel board. There are many, many different explanations as to how the dreidel became the Jewish game of the holiday season. I don't think there's any other holiday that has a game to it, as far as I know. So I think what we're usually we're taught in school, so it's usually an historical explanation. The Jewish people couldn't learn Torah, so they had to hide out in the parks, in the fields, in the caves. And if the Greeks would come and catch them doing mitzvahs, learning Torah, so they took out their little game and they played dreidel. Okay, so That's a simple explanation. There are many different ramazim that are given. The Kloisberger Rebbe gave the final pshat. And he gave this pshat in response to the fact that some people who say, like, dreidel, really? I don't know, it sounds a little like gambling, right? Like, of all games, you know, it doesn't seem like a very Jewish game. We're not really big fans of gambling. What's that?
That was the point. It wasn't supposed to seem like a Jewish game.
Oh, okay, very interesting. Very interesting. You're saying, Adarava, we wanted to make ourselves look like the Goyim. Goyim go to Las Vegas, Goyim go to Atlantic City, and that really fooled the Greeks. Okay, that's true. But we're still playing it now, right? So what happened? Okay, so you're using your chocolate coins, fine. But Lamaisa, what's one of the reasons why we don't like gambling in halacha? One of the reasons. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, what's that?
It's not mind control.
Right, because. Okay, but so why is that? So the answer is because when you come to the table, you're playing your poker hand. So deep down, the only reason you're at the table, it's true. There are people who just like to throw away money for fun. It is true. Okay, I'm not sure that's in line with our hashgafa either. But if you come to the table, you come to the table because you think you're going to win, or you feel you have a very strong shot at winning. You have a strategy. You have a method to the madness, and there's a way that you're going to come out ahead in the end of the day, right? What that means essentially is I'm not really ready to part with my money, but you know, I'm gonna put money on the table because it's an investment, right? I put money in the stock market, I put money on the card table as well. So when I lose and the person on the other side of the table takes all my money, I didn't really give that up wholeheartedly. Right? So it means that the problem almost lies with participating in the game, even if the person on the receiving end, he's taking money that will say smacks of gazela because the person on the other side didn't really want to give it up. That's one reason why gambling is not so simple in halacha. So comes along with Kloisberger Rebbe and says, so what about dreidel, right? You're doing the same thing, right? So he explains BMS yesh chashash al mesach b'kuvya. It is true, dreidel seems a little bit like gambling. Shema ein halah nosin ma'osu b'levshon. Because maybe I'm not giving you all my chocolate coins with a full heart. Ulam kasher kol Yisrael kish echad ulev echad. When all Klal Yisrael has one. Kol echad sameach kish yish l'chaveru kilu haylo. And we're sitting around playing dreidel. And I'm just as happy when you get the gimel as when I get the gimel. I'm just as happy when you win the pot and I get the shin. Okay, this is... So now you know how you have to play dreidel. Okay, you want to be a frum dreidel player? You got to come to the table with a different attitude. That's what the Rebbe is saying. The old tzemach yosher k'shechaveru zocha k'shechaveru zocha. You know what? I'm even happier when he's taking home when he comes to my age. So it's that guy's cavities, it's that guy's calories, that guy's fat. Okay, when you're giving up the coins. But no, I'm even happier when you win. Imkin shuv lo shayach. Then there's no more shaya of gezel. Chanukah, we play the dreidel to raise our sense of Avos Yisrael around this time of year, before the candles, playing dreidel to demonstrate that you have, I have, it's all the same. And Adarav, I'm even happier when you have. And you know, I was thinking about this, and we have a scene this week. That's one of the pshatim also why we make a seam. Why we make a seam, right? Not just the person who's finishing the mesachta, whatever it happens to be. But the fact that everyone participates in the seam says, you know what? I love to be making a seam right now also. I'm not making a seam for whatever, I didn't get there yet. But I'm just as happy when you finish the mesachta as when I'm finishing the mesachta. Everyone asks, why do we do this shtick in camps where we have a siyum every night? So they eat the fleishiks, you know, but we're not supposed to be eating fleishiks, right? So there are many different explanations for that, but I think this gets to the heart of that. Sinas chinam is what we're trying to fix in the summertime, Tisha B'Av, right? So when we all get to celebrate together someone else's accomplishment, that's a model for what the antithesis of sinas chinam is supposed to be. Sinas chinam emerges when that guy has the better job, the better house, the better fill in the blanks, whatever it is, right? When I feel like he has something that I should be one to have that, right? Instead of having the attitude like Rabbeinu B'chai says, like the Gemara tells us, right? The antithesis of sinas chinam shouldn't exist, right? Because how could the right hand ever get angry or feel in competition with the left hand? If you see Klal Yisrael as one big organism, then there's never a clash why he has and I don't, right? Sinas chinam emerges when we don't have the recognition of Adaraba, your success is my success. And I'm just as happy for your success as I would be if it was my own personal celebration. So that's one attitude for Siyam. It's an attitude for playing dreidel. And it's an attitude of all of our Avodas Hashem. We're all in this together. We're all on the same team. We're here to be Mekadeshim Shemayim in the world. And my candle, your candle, eight for me, zero for you, doesn't make any sense. Better for you to have a candle, me to have a candle, share the mitzvah, and bring more persimmonies into the world, rather than take it all for myself, because that's undermining what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in mind with our mitzvahs. Yes.